Well, when young, we eat and grow up. But when middle-aged, we eat and grow out. This leads most middle-aged people to ask, what can we do about those beer belly blues?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 711th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends up there in Quebec City who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Miss Idaho herself, Nikki James. Hello, Nikki.
Good morning.
Also with us today, we have observer Susan Patterson. Hello, Susan.
Hi.
Folks, when young, we eat and grow out tall, but when middle-aged, we eat and grow out. The following insight was purloined by a WikiLeaks from a diplomatic cable out of Mexico. The cable detailed a speech given at a trade luncheon by the next supreme leader of China, Vice President Xi Jinping, who was addressing the leaders of Mexico. Vice President Xi said, and I quote from the cables, "There are some well-fed foreigners who have nothing better to do than point fingers at our affairs. China does not export revolution, poverty, and hunger, or nor cause troubles for you." Now, as China is in contention to become Mexico's top trading partner, Vice President Xi must have been pointing fingers at its chief rival for the top trading spot, which, of course, is the United States. So there, Xi said it. The United States is a bunch of well-fed and thus corpulent complainers. But Xi is wrong. Though many in the United States are fat, and many of the fat are pointing fingers at China, they are not fat because they are well-fed. They are fat because they are poorly fed. The United States, like many developing nations, has an aging population. When the human body ages, it undergoes physical and chemical changes that, if not managed correctly, result in physical manifestations that include emotional depression, diminished libido, and a vastly expanded waistline. As we in the developed world look into the mirror of the developing world and see that well-fed foreigner, we simply must pause to ask, what can we do about our beer belly blues? And who better to ask than the nutrition expert Brad King, who is the author of Beer Belly Blues. Brad, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hey, Michael, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited about the show.
Me too. So you're up there in the frozen wastes of Canada?
I'm actually in Western Canada. I'm in beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia.
Not so frozen waste then.
Not so frozen at all. Little wet, but absolutely beautiful nonetheless.
It is, indeed. For anybody who's ever seen British Columbia, they know that to be true for sure. Beer belly blues, what every aging man and the woman in his life should need to know. So do only men have beer bellies?
Well, you know, I mean, you know this all too well. All you have to do is look around you these days. The majority of people are what I call overfat. I don't like to call people overweight because I really think we need to differentiate where we see weight and where we need weight to come from whenever we're going on whatever ridiculous program we're presently on. And by that, I mean, you know, the statistics show us that one-third of women, a quarter of men at any given time could be found either starting or just completing the latest diet. We have cute little names for these diets. We call them fad diets for a reason, because really they're nothing more than short-term solutions to what we know is a lifelong problem. Women obviously have beer bellies, just as men have beer bellies, but the research is showing that there are different reasons for a woman's beer belly other than a man's beer belly.
And when therein lies our show, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. But the Beer Belly Blues, the reason I wrote this book is because there are so many books that are geared towards women and hormonal deficiencies of women. You know, women are well aware of problems that they experience, especially within North America. Women are well aware of their bodies. They're well aware of the transition that, you know, first starts out as PMS and then perimenopause and then menopause. Women talk about the difficulties. They talk about these changes. And men don't.
Men don't talk.
No, we don't.
We don't ask directions. We don't talk.
Well, you know, we have this thing called the man code, Michael, and it's just not socially acceptable for the majority of men, or at least we don't believe it's socially acceptable to be able to talk about our problems, whether they're physiological or psychological. You know, you don't hear Bob calling up Jeff and saying, "Hey, Jeff, I don't know about you, but I've had a problem with my plumbing downstairs for the past 10 years, and, you know, I've suffered from something called erectile dysfunction." We just don't do that kind of thing, and I think that's why, for the most part, we suffer in silence, or at least we think we suffer in silence, but we bring down the people that are around us, and women, whether we want to believe it or not as men, women are the nurturers of our society. They always have been. They probably always will be. They're holding down the same positions, if not even, you know, more powerful positions than we are as men these days. But the point is, they get sick and tired of seeing us wither away or expand too greatly, and they go and do something about it. And, you know, just to prove that, Beer Belly Blues is an international best-selling book now. It's my 10th book. And 70% of the people that are purchasing this book, hello, they're women. Because, you know, women get sick and tired of their men sitting on their hairy behinds doing absolutely nothing. And so they want to learn what they can do for them. And I've had more testimonials from women how it's changed their lives because it's changed the men in
now
their
you,
lives.
You also write about sports nutrition. I was going to ask you, is there any difference between sports nutrition and nutrition for just living?
Well,
what is
you know,
the difference?
It's interesting because there is a difference. Because when you talk about sports nutrition, and once again, I don't like that word sports nutrition because it has that connotation that it's only for athletes.
How about just performance?
Well, I love that. Performance nutrition. Every single person on this planet can benefit by enhancing their performance in whatever capacity possible. When we talk about things like performance nutrition and sports nutrition, you know, there's different components of it, because what we're really doing is we're working to enhance the regenerative capacity of a person's body. And, you know, you spoke about this really, or you alluded to it at the very beginning of the show when you spoke about aging. The aging of the human body is nothing more than really the body's inability to keep up with the breakdown state of affairs. You know, we have different metabolisms.
Okay,
just
a sec. Let me back up just a second, Brad. Let me ask you my question number one, which might help frame this. When young, we can eat anything and everything, and nothing seems to count. But when we get middle-aged, everything seems to count, no matter what we eat.
Fair enough.
So what changes with age? What is going on to make those things count when they didn't count before?
Well, we lose something called our metabolic capacity, and our metabolic capacity defines our ability to utilize calories over a 24-hour period. So when we use the term metabolic capacity, you know, we're really referring to a constellation of all of these changes that seem to arise in the body that predispose us to accumulate body fat as we're getting older. So, you know, a young person can eat basically anything, or at least for the most part, most young people can eat almost anything and convert those calories into energy and have very minimal, if any, residual fat storage. But as a person's aging, you know, various things are happening. They're having a dysregulation of their hormones. They're having things called insulin insensitivity. We're not able to get rid of the sugar as effectively as we once were. We have energy deficits. We call that mitochondrial dysfunction, where the tiny little engines inside the cells of the body that create energy, we lose the numbers of those engines, but we also lose their ability to maintain optimal levels of energy.
Now, are those things, is the loss just a function of aging?
Well,
or is there a chemical process or a physical process that it just starts to break down and then exacerbates those things.
Yeah, well, I think it's both. I think it's multifactorial. I think for the most part, we exacerbate that by doing the things that we do every day and the wrong things. You know, and when I say multifactorial, I'm talking about we're the ones who choose what we want to put into our mouths every single day. And let's face it, the majority of the population does not eat the right foods, and we eat too many of the wrong types of foods. We're stressing too much. We're not sleeping enough. We're breathing in and sucking in all of these environmental toxins that were never part of our evolutionary existence. All of these things accumulate. We don't exercise. We're, you know, pretty lazy for the most part. And so what it really does is it speeds up this metabolic dysfunction within our body. I do believe, and as a matter of fact, Duke University put out a study a few years back showing we have the genetic capability to live to be about 130, maybe 135.
You know, that's what's going to happen to me. I know it. I'm going to learn to live to be 130, and then they're going to figure out how to halt the aging process of cells, and that's where I'm going to be for eternity.
Well,
130. Hold on, Brad. We're going to take a quick break.
Good.
When we come back, menopause and manopause? Do stay tuned. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Brad King, author of Beer Belly Blues. What are we going to do about those beer belly blues? Right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, welcome back. Michael Olson here. This is The Food Chain. Today we're talking about eating for aging. What happens when we grow a little bit older? When young, we can eat anything, and it just doesn't seem to count. But as we grow older, everything seems to count and add up. And pretty soon we find ourselves in a situation of of too much, and especially too much around our belly. So how on earth do we come to grips with this aging process and eat and live in a way that maintains our youthful figure and vigor? And with us today to help us work this out, we have Brad King, who is the author of Beer Belly Blues, up there in beautiful Vancouver, or British Columbia at least. Brad, we're talking a little bit about the chemical processes that occur as we grow older, and I guess there's one for women and one for men. And for the women, of course, we're talking about menopause, and for men, we're talking about what?
Well, we're talking about, well, women stole the name from us, let's face it. I mean, we would have had the name menopause, they took it. So we call it male menopause, we call it andropause, we call it viropause.
How about manopause?
Well, we can call it manopause. I like the beer belly blues, and I'll tell you why. Because men aren't going to ever admit that they're getting fat, especially in the belly, but we will admit that we drink beer because it's a manly thing to do. And
justification.
The blues comes in because the research shows us conclusively that when men are starting to lose their premier hormone, meaning testosterone, what ends up happening is their ability to stay happy really declines quite drastically. And as a matter of fact,
What do you mean, stay happy?
Well, you know, one of the things that
we lose testosterone, we lose our happiness?
Absolutely, because testosterone is actually a promoter of dopamine production, and the more dopamine we have, the better motivation, the more uplifting moods we actually experience. And I think this is why studies show that men with abnormally low testosterone levels are on average 271% more likely to show clinical signs of depression than men with higher levels of testosterone.
Maybe women should quit calling us dope and start calling us dopeless.
Well, there you go. Or maybe women shouldn't say that we're suffering from the grumpy old man syndrome, because that's what they do. And they are partly right, according to the research. So, you know, here
wait a minute. Let's compare the two then. What happens with menopause and what happens with andropause?
Well, with menopause, what's happening is a woman's hormonal or her sex hormones are declining quite drastically at a specific age. So what ends up happening is it happens almost all at once, where women are losing a great deal of their estrogen, they lose a tremendous amount of their progesterone, all of the other hormones of the body really start to decline, especially the DHEA, and even women are losing a great deal of testosterone after menopause as well. And testosterone has actually been called, one of the most sexually enhancing hormones, both in a man and a woman's body. So what we have to understand is when women go through menopause, many women will lose their libido. So they'll lose their ability to feel sexy. They won't be interested in sex as much as they, once were when they were a little younger. And one of the reasons for that is because we have receptors for the sexual hormone in our brain, as well as we do, obviously, downstairs. And what happens is if we don't have enough testosterone to latch onto those receptors, well, we're obviously not going to feel sexual. We're not going to have a high libido. And this is why in clinical settings, women who have very low to non-existing libidos after menopause, when they're actually given testosterone in a replacement setting, what ends up happening is their libidos come back with gusto the great majority of the time, and for the first time in our lives as men, we're the ones who can say, sorry honey, not tonight, I've got a headache.
So this process occurs roughly in middle age with men and women.
Well, it does, but with men it's a lot more gradual, because it can start in a man's late 20s. It depends how that man is treating his body. Definitely when we're in our late 30s, we're starting to notice more of an accumulation of body fat, primarily in the abdominal cavity.
So wait, just a sec. Would that explain then why, people remark about menopause, because it occurs suddenly and with great fanfare, whereas with men, it's drawn out over a longer period of time and accumulates as a beer belly?
Yes and no, because I don't think it's really accepted yet. It's certainly not accepted by the medical community when we talk about male menopause, but obviously it's very widely accepted. And there's a lot of protocols for women that are going through menopause. I mean, let's face it, there's been a lot of hormonal therapies that have not been met with the greatest research, because obviously there's a lot of very serious side effects with a lot of that, the hormonal intervention for women. But for men, even though we've known about this condition since 1952, doctors aren't talking about it. And I think one of the major reasons for that is because the laboratory reference ranges for low testosterone are actually age-adjusted. So, it's anticipated that we're going to have a drastic decline in our male hormone levels, but that doesn't mean it's a healthy thing to have. And this is why so many men are experiencing decreased energy, low metabolism, decreased muscle mass, cognitive decline, we're losing our memory, definitely an increased risk of cardiovascular disease.
So all of these are part of the loss of testosterone?
Absolutely. This has been proven conclusively. As a matter of fact, look at diabetes. About 75% of the adult population after the age of 40 suffers from what we call pre-diabetes, where we have, unregulated or dysregulated blood sugar levels. Our blood sugar is usually too high because insulin isn't doing its job very effectively. The studies show that men that have a low testosterone level have a 65% increased risk of suffering from type 2 diabetes.
Now, also said something in the book about suffering from violent deaths.
Well, absolutely, because one of the things that happens, and in the book I spoke about this in relation to cholesterol, because what the studies are showing is when people lower their cholesterol to too low a level, they can actually suffer from violent episodes of death, and they can definitely suffer from depression. So, we're in this...
Cholesterol instead of testosterone.
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
But don't forget, testosterone comes from cholesterol, as does estrogen.
Ah.
So, you know, we need a certain amount of fat in our diet, and I think, you know, we've become, for the most part, fat phobics as a society, because going back about 30 or 40 years ago, health experts came out when we were just experiencing the beginning of this thing called the obesity epidemic. And, you know, that's when the health experts, or the so-called health experts at the time, told us that, you know, if we only lowered our dietary fat intake, then, you know, magically the fat on the body would disappear.
You know, that's really interesting also, because the onset of this great obesity epidemic seemed to kind of go along with the transition from eating local foods off the farm to eating mass-produced foods from factories.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And you see this all over the world. You see this in every single culture. The minute we move away from what the human body is designed to eat, what we've evolved to eat, you know, and off of the land, that's very, very important. And the minute we move into commercialization, the minute we start to eat these foods that are stripped of their natural nutrition, you know, whether it's the hull, the seed, the germ, the fiber, the natural fatty acids, I mean, just take an example of a cow that is allowed to go out and graze on grass the way they're designed to eat. That cow is going to produce a very different hormonal profile, which is going to allow that cow to produce very different proteins, but very different fats within that cow's body. And there's an actual type of fat called conjugated linoleic acid, or CLA, that when we eat it, it actually allows the body to burn more of its own body fat.
That's my favorite kind of fat.
Well, there you go. Absolutely. CLA is phenomenal. But if you take that same cow and you now raise that cow off of dead grass or off of something like corn, that cow no longer produces that good form of fatty acid, so the fat composition changes. And it's no different with commercialization. What we're doing is we're putting foods into our body, which, once again, were never part of our genetic makeup. And the body, it's a guessing game.
You know, it reminds me of an old Buffy St. Marie song, "White could be beautiful, but mostly it's not."
Absolutely.
Hey, when we get back, Brad, I'm going to ask you a question, like, can what we do while we're aging mitigate the adverse impacts of menopause and andropause and growing older and all of these things? Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, we're having a little fun with getting rid of weight. How can we deal with these beer belly blues that seem to be so endemic in our American population and in all of the developing world when it gets right down to it? And we're talking with Brad King, who is the author of Beer Belly Blues and You. We're going to open up the phone lines if you'd like to ask about eating while aging. Pick up your phones, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Welcome back, folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking about weight, body weight. You know, when we're young, we can eat just about anything, and it just does not seem to count. Eat as much as we want, whenever we want, all the time, and it just doesn't add up. But when we grow older, middle age or so, something happens, and everything seems to count, every single calorie. And it seems to add up, too. And so we end up with great big beer bellies, some of us. And so today we're wondering, what on earth can we do about those beer belly blues? And we're talking with Brad King, who's the author of the book Beer Belly Blues, specifically directing his writing to men and the women in their lives, but shucks, it also applies to women, and so we're talking about both today. And Brad is also a author about all kinds of fitness books, sports or performance nutrition and whatnot. And so right now we'd like to ask, how do we come to grips with this fact that we're aging and some of the chemical processes that allowed us to burn up everything when we were younger are no longer burning up all those calories and instead are putting them in the bank?
Well, you know, Michael, we've got to fool the body, and we've got to let the body think it's a little younger than it actually is. And, I mean, you know, it's not as hard as people think it is, because we're the ones who really mess up our metabolisms for the most part. And I think we have to, you know, really start becoming a little more proactive as opposed to reactive. We become reactive when we go on these ridiculous diets that really only make us fatter. And what we have to understand is the body is designed to use a great deal of its own fat to create create a great deal of energy. And this is why a byproduct of using fat and becoming leaner is we feel a lot more energetic. But I think a lot of people get away from the feeling. They go on these programs because of the way they look. It becomes very much a cosmetic issue, which is okay. We all want to look a little better. But I think we forget what we used to feel like when we had an abundance of energy. And that's the beautiful thing about retraining your metabolism and allowing it to use more of its own fat for energy.
Wait a minute. How do we go about retraining our metabolism?
Well, you do that through the types of foods that you choose to eat every day.
What about exercise?
Well, exercise is important, Michael, but it's about one-tenth as important
Since it's so insignificant, let's start there and then go to the big stuff. Right?
Okay. Well,
what about exercise?
Well, when we talk about exercise, the most important form of exercise is really weight-bearing activity, resistance exercise, or what we call progressive resistance exercise. And the reason this becomes so important is because we lose such a significant portion of our lean body mass as we go through the aging process. And, you know, lean body mass, to a very large extent, controls the overall metabolic rate of the body. And studies presented in the Journal of the American Geriatric Society actually a few years back showed that muscle mass was literally the number one determining factor in longevity. That means experiencing a longer yet more healthful life. And studies have proven that when we maintain and even enhance muscle mass, it's associated with increased energy, lower body fat levels, better mood, stronger connective tissue, better immunity. So it's extremely important not to be like the majority of the population, which is going to lose about one-third of their lean body mass by retirement age. And some people will lose even up to one-half of their lean body mass, and which means we experience a decline of our overall metabolic rate.
So when our muscles start turning to flabbiness, we're in trouble.
Well, absolutely we're in trouble, because that is premature aging when you really think about it.
Okay, but that's only one-tenth of as important as food, then.
Well, what we have to understand is it's important for functionality. We want to move our body. We want to be as pliable as possible. I mean, let's face it. When we were children, we were able to run outside and do cartwheels and jump on the monkey bars and, you know, do everything we did because we were able to. We took it for granted back then because it was a natural process within the human body. You know, when that goes, and that does become fleeting, especially if we don't keep up with regular movement, then we really realize our own vulnerability when we don't have that full range of motion, when we're not able to really use the body the way it's designed to be moved. So exercise is very important in terms of movement and immobility, but it's also important to allow the body to use fat for energy, because what it does is it actually helps to dissipate the excess blood sugar. And this is why, you know, people who are diabetics or are pre-diabetics, whenever you eat a meal, and you really need to be careful of the amount of food and what you choose to put into your body, because the higher you raise your blood sugar levels after a meal, the more dangerous this becomes to the tissues of the body. And when you go out after a meal and you go for, a good walk where you're using your arms, you're using your legs, you're breathing, you're really taking in that air, what you're doing is you're dissipating, you're getting rid of all of that excess sugar, and you're pushing it into the tissues of the body. And you can do that independent of insulin when you're exercising, and that's the beautiful part about exercising.
So with respect to exercise, though it's only one-tenth of as important as food, it's a question of use it or lose it, right?
Well, absolutely, definitely. And when I talk about that in terms of one-tenth as important, I'm talking about in terms of actually being able to lose body fat, because no one is ever going to burn enough calories in an exercise program or, you know, if people, I mean, you see this all the time, people going to cardio classes, they never burn enough calories to make even a dent in their overall body fat levels. But when you watch what you eat, and when I talk about watching what you eat, I'm not talking about calorie counting. Nobody loves to calorie count. I don't believe in calorie counting. I think it puts an undue amount of stress upon the body, and stress is one of the major reasons why so many people are so fat these days as well, because of the excess cortisol levels that are increased when we perceive our environment as dangerous. And that's really what stress is all about.
It's that's interesting. So stress is directly related to weight.
Absolutely it is. And when we talk about the beer belly, you know, at the very beginning we were talking about the difference between men and women. Well, in men we know that a loss of testosterone causes obesity. I mean, that's been proven this year and last year in studies. We've shown that when we lose our testosterone, the body does not have the same ability to burn body fat. We, you know, we're not able to inhibit fat storage, because what testosterone does is it blocks an enzyme in the body called LPL, or lipoprotein lipase, and that's the enzyme that's necessary for the uptake of fat into the body's fat cells. So when fat cells are actually exposed to testosterone in a laboratory setting in a test tube, the activity of that enzyme that's responsible for creating fat is dramatically reduced. Wow. We also know that testosterone stimulates the actual receptors on the fat membranes to release more body fat, and it increases insulin sensitivity, so it allows more of that blood sugar to get into the cells.
Let's talk about eating and drinking then a little bit. Let's start with drinking.
Well, when we talk about drinking,
specifically, of course, I'm talking about drinking alcohol.
Well, there you go. So contrary to popular belief, alcohol doesn't contribute to body fat expansion just by its calorie.
Wait a minute. Alcohol does not count?
By virtue of its calories.
Okay, so, hold on. We're going to pick this one up when we come back. Did you hear that, folks? Alcohol does not count for body fat. I've got to hear the reason for this. About you. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Brad King. And you can participate if you so desire. Pick up your phones. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1980. We will be right back. Do stay tuned. What can we do about our beer belly blues? Well, we're finding out today with Brad J. King. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, The Food Chain. And today we're looking into weight gain. What happens as we grow older? And as we do grow older, some of the body chemistry that carried us through our youth, they made it possible for us to eat anything, anytime, anywhere, and still not gain weight. Kind of diminish, and so we're stuck facing the fact that whatever we do eat now counts and adds up and gets stored in the bank, and which isn't very pretty. And we're talking about alcohol, drinking alcohol, and Brad made an amazing comment. Alcohol doesn't count, or did I hear that right, Brad?
Well, you heard it partially right, but you do.
The part I wanted to hear was right?
Only about 5% of the actual alcohol calories contribute to body fat. That doesn't sound like a lot, but the reason for this really lies within the way your body uses alcohol for energy, because alcohol calories are used as a preferential and a very easy form of fuel for the body, and by virtue of that, they leave your own body fat stores alone, because alcohol is metabolized in your liver, and first it's metabolized into a very reactive substance called acetaldehyde. And by the way, acetaldehyde is also the toxic compound that's responsible for hangover. So if you have too much of that acetaldehyde buildup because the liver can't process the alcohol fast enough, that's where you're going to get, you know, a lot of that toxic reaction in the brain that's going to make you feel like you were just run over by a truck. But finally, alcohol is actually broken down into something called acetic acid. And acetic acid is really a fancy word for vinegar. And it's the amount of this acetate that's produced, which is actually responsible for preventing fat from being oxidized into energy within the body. So this is how it actually causes the body to gain body fat. And, you know, since we're talking about
just a second. So other words, when I go out and drink a pitcher of beer and have a hamburger with a great big extra large side of fries, my body, instead of burning up the hamburger and fries, burns up the energy in the beer and leaves the hamburger and fries and puts that in the bank.
Absolutely. It gets stored very, very easily. But this is something interesting, especially for the men, because what it does is it actually lowers testosterone levels in the body. And as I mentioned, we need testosterone in order to help the body use its own fat for energy, but also in order to encourage the body to hold on to and build new muscle tissue where the majority of the fat is actually burned. So there was a study actually a few years ago from the University of California at Berkeley, and what they did was they used 8 healthy men who consumed 2 alcoholic drinks, and each of those alcoholic drinks was only about 90 calories apiece. So they did this within a 30-minute period. They drank 2 of these alcoholic beverages, and the men's ability to utilize body fat as energy declined by 73%, not for just those 30 minutes, for several hours after the alcohol consumption. Ooh. And that was with only 2 drinks. So there's a lot of research that shows that alcohol really helps to reduce the testosterone levels, but it also raises cortisol. And don't forget, cortisol is the premier stress hormone in the body. So cortisol reduces not only testosterone, cortisol also makes it very, very difficult for your own body to get at its fat to become an energy source.
So, you know, there seems to be a trend in what you're saying here. Everything that we do that's bad reduces our testosterone. Am I wrong?
No, you're really not wrong, because it even comes down to our attitudes. I mean, there are studies, and by the way, this is very important for women as well, because understand, you know, we need estrogen just as women need testosterone. We just need them in varying amounts. And one of the things that happens to men as we go through the aging process, and especially as we gain the belly fat, and right in underneath the skin of that belly fat in the subcutaneous layer is an enzyme. That enzyme is called aromatase, and what ends up happening to so many men in North America is because we produce so much fat in the belly area, we produce so much of that enzyme, and we convert so much of our testosterone into estrogen.
Uh-oh.
It's not uncommon for men in North America by about the time of retirement age to actually have more estrogen in their bodies than women of the exact same age.
And that becomes manifest how?
Well, it manifests because what ends up happening is it creates even more fat gain on the body, because estrogen causes the body to accumulate more fat. But, you know, we hear a lot of men that are accumulating a lot of fat tissue in the breast region, you know, where their pectorals are. And, you know, we joke about that. We call that the moobs. We call that the man boob syndrome, whatever it is. It's a known phenomenon, and in the medical literature, it's called gynecomastia. And we see this sometimes with athletes that inject anabolic steroids, and it's a byproduct of the body having too much testosterone. What ends up happening is in some of these athletes, they convert some of that testosterone into estrogen, and they deposit some of that fatty tissue right around the nipple region. So this happens to men as well, where we're getting older, we're converting a lot of our testosterone into estrogen, and we're dumping a lot of that extra fat, not just in the abdominal cavity to make more estrogen, but also in the breast tissue and all the areas of the body where, you know, we really don't want fat accumulation. And there was a study a few years back, Michael, this is very interesting. If you take the typical North American man, if you look at his waist circumference, the waist circumference of a man where it's 40 inches or more, that man will typically produce 30% less testosterone than a man that has a waist size of 37 inches or less. So just by looking at the size of your waist, you can tell more or less where you are in that beer belly blues syndrome.
Well, goodness sakes, when we get back, we're going to have to talk about what we can do to manage this change of life and see if we can't come up with a way of maintaining our youthful figure and vigors with Brad King, who is the author of Beer Belly Blues and You. This is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson. What on earth can we do about those beer belly blues? When young, we can eat anything and it doesn't count. But when we're older, we eat anything, anywhere, and everything counts, and it gets stored in the bank where it does not look pretty. We will be right back. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, folks, what can we do about the beer belly blues? There must be some way of managing these great life changes that we all must go through. Brad King, I guess the best thing to do is read the Beer Belly Blues and get a handle on this situation. But can we make a difference? Can we manage ourselves to somehow come back to that youthful figure and vigor that we had when we were younger?
Or? Michael, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, you know, we can talk all day long about how we got here. I mean, you know, there are, you know, we could talk about all the biochemical processes. We could talk about the environmental problems. We could talk about the science of, you know, not getting enough sleep and stressing too much. The point is, too many of us are already here. We're sitting here. Many of them are listening to you right now. And it's time to do something about it. So let's get a little more proactive.
Yes. What do we do? Where do we start?
Well, we start with our attitudes, believe it or not. You know, a lot of people don't want to hear, what do you mean my attitude when it comes to my ability to use fat for energy? But there are a lot of studies to show this. As a matter of fact, there was a study at the Institute of Heart Math in Boulder Creek, California, a few years back that took 30 people, and they used techniques designed to eliminate these negative thought patterns and promote a more positive emotional state. And they showed a 23% reduction in the fat-storing hormone cortisol and a 100% increase in the fat-releasing hormone dehydroepiandrosterone, or DHEA.
So just with attitude?
Just with attitude. Smile a little more. There was another study actually last year that looked at women who underwent Botox treatments, and they found out that these women were naturally happier. Well, you know, women listening to your show right now might say, well, that's a no-brainer because they didn't have as many wrinkles. But, you know, the researchers looked at that, and what they found out was it wasn't because they didn't have as much wrinkles. It was because the women couldn't frown as easily, so they fooled their brain into thinking they were actually a little happier than they actually were. That's not such a bad thing.
That's good.
Well, it's a very good thing. So start off with your attitude. Also look at things like light. You know, a lot of people, when I talk about these things, they go, wow, I've never heard these things before. But the studies show that if you want to jumpstart your metabolism, every morning expose yourself to sunlight by opening the curtains or blinds and standing there for several minutes. I'm not talking about staring at the sun, but allow the sun to bathe over your entire body.
Kind of like a lizard in the morning.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you don't have enough sun, get yourself a full-spectrum light bulbs. You can now buy these LEDs where, you know, they're little light machines that you can expose your face to at least for 20 minutes, half an hour, sometimes an hour a day. And they really change the biochemical makeup of the body that allow the body to actually produce more energy. Here's a very easy one. Increase your water intake, because the energy substance of the body, which is adenosine triphosphate, ATP, is actually broken apart during a process called hydrolysis. Hydrolysis is really a fancy word for saying with water, water broken. So drink more water, add some organic lemon juice directly into your water if you don't like the taste of water, and that will further alkalinize the body, allowing the body to use more of its fat for energy. We also spoke about laying off the booze. Well, that doesn't mean you never can drink again. It just means, you know, really limit your alcohol consumption until you lose enough of the body fat. And here's something, you know, embrace food. Don't be afraid of food. Embrace all three families of the macronutrients, the proteins, the fats, the carbs. Consume about five meals a day, not three meals. I talk about three solid meals and two liquid meals, meaning coming in the form of a very good quality protein.
Brad, out of time, but you're too much fun. Can I call you and bring you back to talk about performance nutrition sometime?
Absolutely. All anytime. Right. And people can
this
get more information.
This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson out. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Thanks, Brad.
Listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.